The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to the co-creator and co-showrunner of Marvel's Agent Carter, Tara Butters. Stick around. If you thought Angelina Jolie was pretty resourceful in a fight during Mr. and Mrs. Jones, wait until you see Peggy Carter in a scrum. Agent Carter kicks ass. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you today by Amazon.com. When you visit MrMedia.com and click on any of the links to purchase books, music, movies, gift certificates, or anything else through our Amazon link, you support this free video podcast. Whenever you need something else from Amazon, please consider returning to MrMedia.com to order it. It doesn't cost you any extra, and we sure appreciate the support. And don't forget, MrMedia.com has more than 1,200 celebrity audio and video interviews archived on the site. That's hundreds upon hundreds of hours free entertainment. Subscribe for free on MrMedia.com, and you'll instantly get an email every time a new interview is posted. You can also watch and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Vimeo, Dailymotion, The Realm Network, and Frequency.com. And if you preferred to just listen, Mr. Media is also available for free on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blueberry, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Podfeed.net, and Player FM. You can subscribe to any of those services and never miss another episode. Finally, you can interact with Mr. Media interviews on all kinds of social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and more. Friend or follow us, we'll friend or follow you back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of men from the Marvel Universe who are rapidly developing a lot more respect for 1940s American women and their right hooks in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Here's what we knew about Peggy Carter before the launch of Marvel's Agent Carter TV series on ABC in January 2015. She first arrived on the scene in the movie Captain America: The First Avenger, fully formed. She was more than the equal of any man, including Steve Rogers, with whom she eventually fell in love. She was devastated at the end of said movie when the only man, we believe, who ever tamed her was lost in an icy airplane crash. Emphasis on icy. We're talking 60, 70 years of icy. She died of old age and a broken heart at the beginning of the sequel, Captain America: The Winter Soldier. Yep, that's about it. So when ABC and Marvel Studios announced plans for a limited-run Marvel's Agent Carter series to give Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a winter break in the midst of what turned out to be its brilliant second season, it led to a lot of head-scratching. With all the great untapped heroes in the Marvel Comics universe, they're giving a network series to, nobody? And it takes place in the 1940s, apart from modern Avengers continuity. Okay. Even when the kick-ass teases started appearing, my wife, who's really gotten into all this, repeatedly asked me, "Who is she again?" So, in a lot of places, expectations were, well, kind of low. A world of doubters all mentally went to Missouri and said, "Show me." And that's exactly what Tara Butters and Michelle Fizikas, co-creators and showrunners, co-showrunners of Marvel's Agent Carter, did. Haley Atwell burst onto the scene in the premiere and, for my time and money, makes for positively awesome, awesome comic book style TV. There are too few women on the tube who do what she does. Butters and Fizikas have continued her movie persona as smart, wisecracking, and physically gifted in the ass-kicking department. And Atwell is the best kind of eye candy. Beautiful, but the camera doesn't have to slobber over her in long, leggy, or scoop-neck shots. She is stunning from every angle, all the time. Now, as I welcome Tara Butters to the show, I have to offer a thank you to Tara's husband, Mark Guggenheim. The executive producer of Arrow on that other, some other network, as they say, was my guest last spring talk about Arrow and to talk about his book, Overwatch, and was kind enough to extend my invitation to Tara to be here today. Tara Butters, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you for having me.
Get any of that wrong so far?
The only thing I would say is that we didn't create Agent Carter. Stephen McFeely and Christopher Marcus, who wrote both Cap movies, wrote the first pilot episode. Yeah. And we worked with them to basically structure the 8-episode arc.
Once again, men taking credit for something they probably don't deserve. What? Okay, all right. We'll give them that. We'll give them this. We know who's in charge, though, don't we?
Michelle and I have been very lucky to be involved in the project, and it's something that we're incredibly proud of, and it's been a blast.
Well, look, Tara, let's get right to the elephant in the room, okay? Mm-hmm. What was it like having Stan Lee on the set?
You know what? It was a wonderful treat. He is in episode 4, which airs this upcoming a week from today. And it is always fun to have someone of his stature to have a cameo in the show is great.
I imagine, I don't know how much time you got to talk with him or spend with him, but I imagine even Stan Lee had to be a little surprised that you guys brought Peggy Carter to life.
You know what? I'll be honest with you. I wasn't there that day. That's part of the problem with running two shows. We kind of bounced back and forth between both. I know it's a fun little sequence towards the end of episode 4. And I hope people will check it out because I think they'll enjoy it.
We should make note, when you talk about bouncing between two shows, the other show I think is Resurrection?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to be fair about that. We're probably really never going to mention it again in this interview, but...
No worries.
That's fine. I didn't know until right before we started this interview that yesterday was the last day of shooting on Agent Carter. Tell me about that.
It was bittersweet. It is the best show I've ever worked on, and it was amazing because our entire writing staff came back for the final shot. Most of the actors stayed to the final shot. Let's just say there was a lot of drinking and celebrating that went into the early morning. It was really, really a special night.
Is it true that the final episode and the final shot is a time travel that takes Peggy to 2015? No. I got to take a shot here, you know. Is it hard to get – obviously, we're not going to give away any spoilers. I really don't want to because I haven't seen it yet either, and you just finished shooting. But, I mean, is it hard to wrap up an 8-episode season not knowing if you're even close to getting a pickup for another season, whether it's
Not on a show like this. I'll be honest with you. The fact is we really treated it as an 8-episode or an 8-part movie. And if you think of like any of the Marvel stuff in that kind of big event, the fact is one of the things I loved about how we structured the 8 episodes is I think every episode is great, but the fact is there's a build in the first 4 that goes like gangbusters through the last 4. And it's just a nonstop from episode 4 on, everything is so different in each episode, and it really carries you through to the end. And I feel like every character has an arc, and there is a completion at the end of the 8, but you can absolutely see that this has legs to go into other seasons.
Other seasons, other movies.
Yes. Marvel. I would do any of it. I love her. I love Haley is a dream to work with. James Darcy, Enver Jakaj, Chad Michael Murray, Shea Whigham. It's the best cast, and their chemistry is fantastic. And Bridget Regan and Lindsay Fonseca. I have to say everybody's name.
Got everybody in. Yes. I'm curious, did you or did Marvel Studios or did ABC learn much from the way that the first season and a half of S.H.I.E.L.D. unfolded. There was criticism of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the first season that it got off to a slow start. There were a lot of characters. It was hard to follow. But middle of the first season, it really caught fire. And the second season, I think, has been incredibly dynamic.
We didn't have any type of, from either Marvel or ABC, any directives. It was, I mean, look, I think I don't envy having to create S.H.I.E.L.D. And I think they've done a really wonderful job in that it's incredibly hard because you're dealing with a universe in which you have all these superheroes out there and, you know, you're trying to make this team connect with the audience when they know that all these superheroes exist in this time period. And I think they've done a really, really good job. And I think that that series keeps getting better and better. We had a different, I don't want to say problem. It was more that, you know, like you had mentioned in your opening, we had to, A, get people interested in watching a show about the 1940s. And I think Haley is incredibly memorable in that first movie. But the fact is, you know, that's the movie, you know, the movie you had to see to kind of know her from. One of the things we did about how we structured the first episode or how Marks and McFeely did was, I don't think you need to have seen the movie to enjoy the series. We catch you up in the beginning about her connection to Captain America, but the fact is, what's happening in the 8 episodes is about these 8 episodes, and then we were able to link it to the greater MCU, which is something that was really important to us, was that as much as we are taking place in the 40s, we will give the audience, if you watch all 8 episodes, you will have a better understanding of the broader picture of the Marvel Universe.
So episode 8 ends with Namor the Submariner rising up from the water that we keep seeing, right? Because he was present in Marvel characters in the 40s. And then somehow we see a streak going through the sky, and it's the original Human Torch. And that's how you tease getting to another season, right?
I will say this is, stay tuned, watch the entire, to the end of episode 8. There is a nice treat for Marvel Universe.
Listen,
it's fun.
DC has figured out a way they're going to bring Aquaman to the movies. I figure Marvel can bring the Submariner to TV.
There's problems with the rights. I think that there is a rights issue with him.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know the full thing on it, but I remember someone telling me that.
All right, so I think just in that sentence, we've ruled out that the Submariner will be appearing in episode 8.
Yes, but I still think that people will be really happy.
All right, fair enough. Oh, well, yeah, okay. I don't know what that would be. All right, so let's go back. Take me back to how a tertiary character in the first Captain America movie, and I say that with all due respect, but
no.
I mean, Captain America was number one, Bucky and the Red Skull, let's say, number two, and then everyone else is kind of tertiary from there, just in case anyone's going to question me on that.
But she made such an I think she only has around 12 to 15 minutes of screen time.
Right.
But people really remember her from the movies if you've seen it. And I mean, she has such star quality. And you couldn't do this without her. I think there was such a great response from the one shot that Louis Desposito directed that was on the Iron Man 3 DVD. Mm-hmm. That my understanding is Bob Iger saw the one shot of her and said, that should be a TV show, just like he saw the one shot of S.H.I.E.L.D. and said the same thing. So that's kind of my understanding of how the ball got rolling on it. And once she agreed to that she was open to it, then, you know, it just took time to kind of get all the pieces in place.
Is there precedent for this? Can you think of any other situation where, I mean, there've been TV shows made from movies, but it's usually,
right.
You know,
it's not usually the actor from the movie reprising their role. I don't know off the top of my head.
I couldn't think of anyone. And of course, you have a great advantage here in that because Marvel and ABC are basically one, you have access to you're able to use the film from the movie to set up, so we actually see Captain America, and yeah. Certainly in the first couple episodes, it's pretty amazing. And the carryover with Howard Stark and Tony Stark, there's a lot of connective tissue.
Well, and Dominic is so fantastic in the episodes that he does, and he's just so charming and fun. And James Darcy is just a dream, and I love their dynamic, James and Haley. It's very it's very Thin Man to me, or very Hepburn and Tracy, and it's been just so much fun.
The problem, and my wife and I talked about this, the problem is you establish from the beginning that Darcy's Jarvis is married. And so while there's – oh, well, look at the look I'm getting. Wait a minute.
Yes, but I was a huge X-Files fan. I actually started as an assistant there. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, one of the things I always loved about that show was, especially in the first, 4 years, was that these two people – really did care about each other, but it weren't romantic. Mm-hmm. And, it's too easy to go to the romantic trope. But at the same time, their relationship is very, it's very true and very real to me. And, where it ends up of just feeling like I don't doubt that Jarvis really loves his wife. Mm-hmm. And I don't doubt that Peggy admires and looks at Jarvis and sees something that she doesn't have. And, and he admires and sees something special in her. And I just feel like that is different than most typical TV shows.
Okay, what about, and I'm sorry, I cannot remember the character's name. The fellow who's got the disability.
Sousa? Agent Sousa.
Agent Sousa. My wife and I have talked about – we watch the show together. That's why I keep mentioning my wife. So we talk about it a lot. There seems to be some potential there because he seems on the verge of being the first man in that department to respect and recognize her ability.
Absolutely. I mean, that is something that we kind of hint at, and that obviously there is a crush there for him. And I think for part of – Peggy's character for the course of these 8 episodes is about her letting go, mm-hmm. and letting go of Cap. And that's how Cap stays alive, actually, in these 8 episodes, is, in order to kind of move on with her life, she has some emotional work to do herself. And so I think that we obviously played with Daniel Sousa's character and sort of like, here's this really good guy who actually has something in common with her. He's not considered the best agent, not because he's not the smartest or the most capable, but because of a disability. And, he can understand what it's like for her to be just looked over. And I think that's something interesting that kind of bonds them. But as you'll watch through the course of the 8 episodes, he's an incredibly capable agent. And that might get in their way.
Interesting. I'd be very curious about that. Now, I want to ask you about something. I mentioned your husband before, Mark Guggenheim, who's the EP on and writer on Arrow over on the CW, was a comic book writer before that show started, is still, I think, periodically writing comics, has a great love of comics. Is there any comic book fangirl in you? I mean,
I actually got interested in comics out from Mark, and he would tell me ones that he thought I would like, and then Mark and I actually wrote a comic book together.
Oh, what was that? I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
We did it for Image maybe about 2 years ago. And I'm going to be an idiot right now and forget the name of it.
Well, then I don't feel anywhere as bad as I did a minute ago.
I really enjoyed it. I don't know why I'm so focused at looking at this green dot. I'm like in a trance.
It has that effect. Was that the first time you've written
It'll
together?
It'll come to me. It is the first time we've kind of written together, and it came off of we had gone to go see that big comic book movie. What was it?
Give me a hint, I'll help.
it's not any of the major, like, it's not DC, it's not, it's none of them, it has the smiley face on the cover.
Watchmen.
Watchmen. We went to see Watchmen, and I left the movie going, you know what, I'd read the comic book to know what it was about, and my one thing was, for me, the most interesting part came at the end, which was what happens to all these superheroes if there's no need for them anymore. Mm. And so that's kind of was the jumping off part for the comic book that we wrote together, which was the idea that if a supervillain basically realized the best way to get rid of superheroes was to end all crime. And then sort of like the how it basically just made the superheroes fall apart. Hmm. And it was just kind of a fun, interesting kind of character development. We did, I think it was like maybe 6 issues or so, but it was a lot of fun. And I wish I could remember the name.
I'll try to find it and add it in the post. On.
Yes.
So who is the easier spouse to write with, Mark or Michelle?
Well, it's so different because we worked out the story and then Mark wrote the comic book. Obviously Michelle and I we've written together for 16 years. Mm-hmm. We have like a whole process. What I love about being married to a writer is it's someone who understands everything I'm going through. Mm-hmm. And I can do the same for him. And you understand the process, you understand what it's like to work with studios, networks, producers, actors, and you can be there and be supportive. That makes it easier. I think that would be so much harder if you were with somebody who didn't understand what it was like.
You know, I didn't even have this in my notes, but I'm going to ask now. How did you and Mark meet?
We met at Law & Order. Michelle and I were working on Law & Order Special Victims Unit, and Mark was a writer on Law & Order, and our offices were across the hall.
He wasn't playing a corpse. He was a...
No. and he's a lawyer writer, so it was always really helpful for Michelle and I when we had law questions, we would go ask Mark.
Right. Of course, he got his start writing for... Was it The Practice or Boston Legal? I can't remember now.
The Practice.
It was The Practice. Okay. I pay attention. People don't think so, but I actually pay attention.
The comic book was called Halcyon.
Halcyon. Who helped? Was that Allison?
Did she Allison.
Allison. All right. Thank you, Allison. Or Allison. We'll combine Allison with Halcyon. So you and Michelle, from what I've read, met as assistants on The X-Files and served as writer-producers on Law & Order SVU, and you've done other shows, and of course you're still working together on Resurrection at the same time you're doing Carter, and then you also went on and you created Reaper together. So I imagine that the time spent on X-Files and even SVU, with all the baggage and the tricky continuity and backstory on those series, it must have been some kind of good prep for entering the Marvel Universe.
Michelle and I never wrote on The X-Files, but it was an incredible learning experience to have that be one of our first shows to just work as an assistant on. And the fact was, looking how hard those writers, Chris Carter, Vince Gilligan, Frank Spotnitz, it was an incredible experience to be there during kind of their heyday. And I remember being so excited when those scripts would come out and to be able to read it first. And it really did drive like our excitement to be in the business. But it was working on Law & Order Special Victims Unit when we were, I think we started there as an executive story editor and working for Neil Baer, that really taught us so much about the producing television. And, Neil was an incredible teacher, and he really you know, taught us how to be on set, how to edit, and that was an amazing experience. But it wasn't until we did Reaper did we really learn how to, like, run a writer's room. Because a lot of the shows we'd work on to that point we would do our breaking by ourselves. And so Reaper, we had a writer's room. We worked with a bunch of writers we had worked with in the past. And I would say Agent Carter and Reaper have been the two best experiences we've had in television. Getting our vision across and working with the most amazing writers.
Reaper had a very good rep. I have to admit, I did not see Reaper, but I know. And that's what I want to ask you about. It had a very good reputation, a very loyal following. I imagine the work you put into it, you kept probably thinking and hoping, based on that, that it was just about to break through. It was always right on the cusp of really bigger things.
We were on the wrong network at the wrong time. The fact of the matter is our ratings were on par with Gossip Girl, but the CW was at a phase where, I mean, look at it now with Flash and Arrow and a lot of programming that skews more male, but we launched the same time as Gossip Girl, and at that time they decided they wanted to be the young female network. And we did not fit in. We had a bunch of stupid guys working at a big box store working for the devil. And they just didn't know what to do with us. Yeah. And what was crazy was that we, like, demographically, we obviously skewed more male, but our repeats did better than Gossip Girl. So it was it was a taste thing. But, I mean, ratings-wise, we were right on par with everything. So it was a real disappointment. And it's one of those things where I can't tell you how many times different people at the CW, and currently Mark Pedowitz, who is running the CW, actually was the head of the studio where we created Reaper. And he loved the show. He was a huge, like, supporter of the show. I mean, if we had been out now, I think we would be looking at a different story.
Oh, the CW, you're right. I mean, it's such a different place. I don't think I had spent more than 5 hours with the CW up until the last two or three seasons. And now, you know, I mean, there's so many really fine shows. I mean, that appeal to me as a, you know, middle-aged man.
Look at Arrow and Flash and Jane the Virgin. I mean, they're all really quality shows. And, you know, I'm glad to see that they found a home.
Well, and I just the interview we just posted yesterday on Mr. Media was with one of the stars of The 100 on that network, mm-hmm. which is in its second season, and they renewed their entire schedule last week. Got renewed in one day. I mean, that's
actually great for television.
Yeah.
Because as a creator or a showrunner, the fact is, the sooner you know you have a pickup, really does impact the quality of what you're doing. Because if I could know today that Agent Carter was coming back for a second season, the amount of work that I could do between now and starting production, it would be incredible. Mm-hmm. Because I would be able to have broken the season out with my writing staff and if have scripts ready to go so production can get a jump on everything. That's the difference between network and cable. A lot of the cable shows actually, they allow you to have your writing staff going so much sooner before you actually start production that, you know, most of your scripts are written. I have friends who wrote on Breaking Bad and now Better Call Saul, and, you know, they have the majority of their scripts written before they ever go to production. Mm. And I mean, I feel like we're at this interesting time in the landscape for television. And, you know, I think that, you know, with the more channels out there making television, it's great for writers and it's great for production, but you also want quality. And so we're all trying to find that balance. Mm. And finding the balance of, like, how do we make the best show, which might mean smaller orders for things, or You know, the cable markets do smaller orders, but they also tend to pick things up for two seasons automatically.
Right.
So because they know that you need that time to garner an audience, even if they're doing a shorter season.
Plus, the creative people need some form of commitment. I mean, because 10 mm-hmm. episodes, 8 episodes, not enough to make a living on.
No, and I think that, and that's actually been the downside for cable has been they do 10 or 13 episodes, but they're actually committed for about twice as long as any of the writers in network. So they're actually getting paid far less to do cable. So, I mean, like, look, there's pluses and minuses on both sides. There's quality, and then there's quality of life. So, like, getting paid for, you know, how much work you're doing.
Well, the good news for you, of course, is that your husband's show got picked up for a fourth season.
I'm very happy for him.
So you will be able to buy groceries in the fall.
Yes.
And I guess, we have any sense of resurrection?
You know, our season finale, I believe, is on this Sunday. I don't at this time. I'm very proud of the season. I think that it is a show that has an amazing cast, and it was great. I mean, again, you just, you know, it's people need to tune in, and hopefully they enjoy it. You know, it's been an incredible pleasure working with ABC on both shows. They've been incredibly supportive to Michelle and I, and we're just really happy to be here.
Great cast in Resurrection. I got to say, I have not been able to get into it because the whole concept just freaked me out too much. I just couldn't do it. I'm sorry.
I
appreciate the work that goes into it.
No, and Omar and Kurtwood, I mean, Francis Fisher, it is truly a great cast.
Well, and Kurtwood, interesting, you've worked with him and Kyle Bornheimer, who have that...
It's the second time working with Kurtwood, actually. I worked with him on Chaos, too.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And Bornheimer, who, I was going to ask you about later, but I'll bring it up now, who is in Carter.
Yes.
Oh, I was so disappointed. I don't want to give anything away to someone who's behind me, but so disappointed by what happened with this character. I love that guy. I'm dying for him to be in something for a long time.
You know, but wasn't it surprising?
Yeah, it was completely surprising.
Here's the thing. Again, like, not to spoil things for people, but the fact was there's something very big that happens with his character. And, you know, it just – that's the thing. We wanted to take people by surprise. And there's a couple really big moments like that within the series that we hope people enjoy.
Our jaws dropped when it happened. And the thing was, back in December, I had reached out to his wife about having him on the show to talk about it. And at that moment, it seemed like it was going to happen. And now I think I sort of understand why it didn't happen. I mean, anyway.
We were so lucky that Kyle agreed to do the show. I mean, the fact was, you know, he did us a huge favor, and he's absolutely wonderful.
Oh, he's great. Yeah. Somebody get this guy a show, please. All right. So anyway, let's come back to Carter. Has there been any constraint on you in terms of the storylines for the show, and in terms of connecting with the old comics of the 40s? Not that anyone but me and maybe your husband remember what was actually in any of them. Is there any constraint whatsoever?
I have to say, you know, look, and when we first took the job, you know, obviously Marvel is very, you know, strict in the sense of what they want out there. They want to keep it very controlled so they can make sure that people aren't spoiled, you know, or don't get spoilers. And, you know, they do it for their fans. They want their fans to have a great experience, and, you know, whether it be a movie or a TV show. And so we'd heard that they can be difficult to work with, and I have to say it was anything but. We had a unique experience because we worked as closely with Marvel TV as we did with Marvel Film, because she came from a Marvel Film character, and Luis D'Esposito, who is the co-president of Marvel Studios, directed the pilot. They were very involved. And I have to say, they gave us a lot of fun things, and a lot of fun things that will come out in the next couple episodes in 4 and 5 that I think the fans will be really excited about. And we were just really lucky. I mean, it has been a really, I feel like I keep saying it, but I'm coming off of yesterday being the last day of shooting, and we just had so much fun.
And is there a the equivalent of like a Marvel historian who vets any of these scripts just to make sure that things, you know?
We have a producer on our show, and his name is Eric Carroll, and he actually works for Marvel Studios. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was assigned our project, and he sits in the writer's room with us and in editing, and he is very good at kind of suggesting a character that might work as into our, like, if we're talking about a certain storyline, maybe that can be this character. And it's been really incredibly helpful to have somebody like that. And then we also have Megan Bragner, who comes from Marvel TV, who kind of keeps us in the loop of what the other shows are doing. And so if there's a way to connect to S.H.I.E.L.D. or set something up for one of the other TV shows, she's been a huge asset in kind of helping us with that.
Okay. And tell me a little bit about your star, Haley Atwell. Is there anything that this woman does not do well? I mean, just you and me talking here.
I have not found it yet.
Really?
She is funny. I have never heard her sing, but she's funny. There's an amazing scene between her and Dominic in episode 4 that it will blow you away. She's a goofball. She is just constantly keeping the set light and fun, and you couldn't ask for a better number one on the call sheet.
And has in the course of this show coming together, obviously we've just wrapped up, but did she make any special requests of the writers to better fit Peggy to her?
Nope.
And was there any, I guess it was something we talked about, is how much did you know going in about her physical fitness and her ability? And I mean, it seems like we see her do, I'm sure that she's got obviously doubles for stuff, but.
She does a lot of her own stunts. The fact of the matter is it always looks better. And that's one thing I learned from Arrow is, you know, having spent some time on their set, the reason why their stunts look amazing and is that the actors are learning the fight sequences and participating in it so that you can have those closer shots to really sell it. And then, I mean, obviously the more dangerous things you have, a stunt person who is in doing it, but Haley loves it. She loves, you know, getting right in the thick of it. And honestly, she has not made there's been no request of, you know, can you give me a love interest? Can you do this? Can you do that? I mean, she is game for anything.
You know, I, a couple months ago, I had a couple of sick days. And I had on hand, I had just bought in a used movie record store, the entire first season of Linda Carter's Wonder Woman, which was set in the 1940s. And I remember this, I was a teenager when this came out, and I just, you know, like every boy at that age, at that time, just loved Linda Carter. Just, I mean, she's just, you know, and I sat down and I watched the whole thing. I couldn't believe how god-awful it was and how – I'm sorry. I still love Linda Carter, but
yes.
I couldn't believe how god-awful it was. Every episode was basically the same. And, you know, it's Wonder Woman, so, I mean, there's fight sequences. They were horribly done. They were so – and then, you know, you think about – and I bring it up because Agent Carter is also set in the 40s. You have this very strong woman who doesn't have superpowers or an invisible plane or the cuffs or the lariat or whatever you want to call it. But there's such an incredible difference in the quality and the image, the impression you get watching Haley Atwell do these action sequences. It's really remarkable.
Well, the thing is, we keep saying that her big superpower is that people underestimate her. And one of the things we say about her fighting style when we're talking with Casey, our stunt coordinator, is that she should be always resourceful. And she's someone who can look at what's around her and use it in a fight. She's a dirty fighter. I mean, she's not going to ever be doing parkour and doing backflips. That's not Peggy Carter.
There's a scene in the is it the Avengers movie? Was it Captain America? I can't remember. With Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow, and she's tied. Must have been the Avengers. She's tied to a chair, and she's being interrogated very nastily, being beaten up, and you're watching it, you're like, holy God, what's going on? And of course, she winds up turning the tables, and she beats the crap out of these guys. I could see Hayley Atwell, doing the same thing. It's just.
And you will see some of that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to thank you in advance for that. We don't know at this point if the show will be picked up for a second season. Do you have a preference? Would you like to see it picked up for another short season where maybe it again fits in and gives a break for S.H.I.E.L.D.? Or would you really like to see a full 22-23 episode season?
Here's the thing. I actually think with any type of highly serialized storytelling, 10 to 30, anywhere between 8 and 13 is the right number. But I just want to do this series so badly, I'll take anything they give me.
Okay.
It's just been so much fun. And if they said it was 6, we would do 6. If they told us they needed 20, we would find a way to do 20. But it's been such a pleasure. I just want to keep writing her.
And I wanted to ask you a little bit about your partnership with Michelle, the creative dynamic of it. Can you tell me a little bit about who does what or how it works? Who will spark an idea?
If we're doing a pilot, usually what happens is one of us will have an idea, and if we decide that's the one we're going to do, we will break the episode together and get it all on the board and then literally re-break it again. And until we get to a place, and when we're breaking on the board, we're literally, what is the beginning, middle, and end of the scene? Excuse me. Because with both of us writing a script together, you can't just kind of go, and then this happens. Mm-hmm. We really need to know what the other one is going to do. And so we will, we call it micro-breaking. And we will break out the 5 or 6-act structure depending on who we're selling it to. And then we will go to outline. And then from that outline, we'll go to script. And what we typically do is we split the script in half. And each of us will write a half. And then we will trade and give each other the other half and kind of either rewrite. I tend to write short, Michelle tends to write long, so somewhere in the middle. So a lot of times I'm editing and trimming hers, and she might go into mine and make it a little, expand it. And somewhere in the middle, we end up with a script that we're happy with. But it's been this sort of process of I enjoy the story breaking more than Michelle. Michelle enjoys writing more than I, like putting words to the page. And we found a balance.
Is one of you more action driven or more narrative driven than the other?
No, we've done so many different types of television, and that's one of the things we've been very blessed to be able to do is we've done comedy and, action shows like Hawaii 5-0 or issue shows like SVU when we were on it. They were mostly issue driven. And then, light family dramas. And I mean, we've done a little bit of everything. And I do appreciate all of those types of different genres for different things.
Okay. Well, I just have a couple of quick, short questions and then we'll wrap up. And you've been very gracious with your time. And I want to point out, unfortunately, your writing partner, Michelle, was ill today. We were expecting her. And Michelle, we're sorry that we missed you here, but second season, okay?
Come back. Absolutely.
All right. So I got to ask you this. If the day comes when there is an Agent Carter action figure, could she beat Mark's Arrow action figure in a dining room table brawl?
Well, probably they will be up in my kitchen because that's where we actually store our action figures. We have this little shelf thing that goes across, and Mark has put all his action figures up there. But I think we would have to take one down to put Agent Carter next to Black Canary, maybe. But I would like to think that she would definitely be someone that he wouldn't know what to do with. She's smart and cagey.
Hmm. All right, last question. You and Michelle both worked on X-Files. You met there, that you were assistants on the show. And then this past week, as you know, word surfaced that Fox is talking to Chris Carter.
I know.
About reviving the show, and that it apparently is something that both David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson are in favor of. So I wondered if you knew anybody else who might like to return to that world.
You know what? I don't know. I hope so. I mean, I would hope that maybe you would see Mitch Pileggi.
I meant you and Michelle.
Oh, me and Michelle? Well, you want to know what?
Vince is busy.
Yes. You know, it's so funny. I mean, there's something about that time period on the X-Files for us that was so unique and special because we were kind of on the outside looking in, that I don't know that I want to change my experience.
Okay.
It's nice to be a fan of something. When you work in television too long, at a certain point, you stop being fans of certain, like, there's certain things I don't want. Like, weirdly, we ended up working with Joss Whedon on Dollhouse, and we almost didn't take the meeting at first because we were such huge fans, and we were so afraid of, like, changing that experience. Luckily, Joss is amazing and hilarious and has been nothing but fantastic to work for. But when you have someone you idolize like that, you're kind of afraid of, like, oh shit, what if they're a secret asshole and I don't want to have that, you know, when you really respect somebody.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing because that would be a great pitch for FXX, Secret Asshole, the series. Sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, but, like, so, I mean, there's certain things, like, if X-Files came back, I would be really excited as a fan to watch it.
You wouldn't be waiting by the phone hoping that maybe Chris might like you to come back this time as a writer, you know, writer.
I know, producer. I think I'd rather be a fan.
Okay, just curious.
I think that, you know, it's like Game of Thrones. I enjoy watching it. I don't know that I want to write it.
Okay. I was just curious. I mean, the timing is such that, you know, this show's ending. We don't know what's going to happen with Resurrection. You might have time on your hands.
I think ABC's going to keep us pretty busy.
Okay. Okay. Anything you know you want to tell us?
We have a deal with ABC. Oh. So they, for, you know, we'll be here for at least another year or two.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. I'm glad to hear it. And how convenient. They have you under contract. All right. Well, folks, listen, you can see Marvel's Agent Carter every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on ABC for the next several weeks through the end of, I guess, February.
Yep.
Right? And by the way, action figures not included. Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. Now, obviously, there's a website for Agent Carter at abc.com, but I am curious, do you and your partner have a website? Do you have a
Twitter
preference? Yeah.
You can contact us on Twitter, and, you know, we post, we live tweet all the episodes, and we post a lot of behind the scenes photos, and, you know, I'm at Bread and Butters, and Michelle is at Michelle Fizikas, and obviously Haley, and you can see a lot of great things from behind the scenes.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Tara, it was just a lot of fun to have you today. I am so enjoying the show. You know, we try to tell everyone we can to give it a shot, take a look, and you're doing a great job. I look forward.
Thank you. And you can also watch the show on Hulu and ABC.com if you've missed an episode.
Just in case. Very good. All right. Well, Tara, my regards to your husband and your writing partner, your two spouses.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm not going out tonight. I'm going to stay.
to believer. Turn up the stereo receiver. Turn up the stereo receiver.
Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank Newsroom, preparing for you another Buzz Burbank News and Comment. Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry, and some make me sad, and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human? I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at BuzzBurbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation. Weekday mornings right here on the Realm Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to the George and Tony Entertainment Show. Prepare for awesome mediocrity.
We're the Cousin Oliver of the Realm Network. I'm George.
And I'm Tony.
And we're a weekly family-friendly podcast about pop culture.
From our point of view.
At RealmNetwork.com. The George and Tony Entertainment Show. From the Realm Network.
This is Snake. Do you read me, Otacon?
Loud and clear, Snake.
Did you listen to the latest episode of the Gaming Marathon on the Realm Network?
Of course. They really know their stuff about gaming, especially that Usid guy.
Yeah, but that Chirac guy is a real jerk. I don't like him.
Regardless, their reviews are spot on and they tell it like it is.
That's for sure.
What happened, Snake? Were you spotted?
Nah, it's just Lowell Melser crying about the O's again.
Close call.
I better continue the search for Metal Gear, but keep listening to the Gaming Marathon each week.
You got it, Snake.
New every Monday afternoon right here on the Realm Network.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
What you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
These are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot. Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
Resistance is futile. It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network. And catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights.